Accession number 11377, Reel 9.
Mr. W. Bateman, Reel 9. In the Sudan, Mr. Bateman, and coming up closer, of course, to the end of the 1930s, were there any changes in equipment that you were getting?
Yes, there was. They started to bring what they call motor transport. It was there were small Dodge trucks, I think, that came from America. And they were American trucks, like. And they used to hold, I think it was either eight or six or eight, I'm not quite sure. And that, and the Statler and all, a lot of the young drivers how to drive a motor car. Then they couldn't drive, they were learning to drive. I never learned to drive, anyhow. And that's as far as we got to, that as far as transport's concerned, because we never used to ride on them. The only time we rode on them was maybe out to the rifle range. And then nine times out of ten we used to walk. Mm. But we used to take stores out. And they used them to get foodstuffs, stores from the main ordnance depot.
Had you got any equipment like the early form of carrier, that kind
no,
of thing?
No, it hadn't come, they hadn't come out then. We hadn't got them then.
And you still have Lewis guns and rifles, basically?
We still had the Lewis gun and the Lee Enfield rifle. Mm. And there's still the machine gun company.
Have there been any changes in the commands, in the offices?
No change at all. We changed from the foreman fours to foreman threes. I'm not quite sure when that started.
Where did you go next?
Well, it was September 1939. The 2nd Battalion was due to return to the home station. Well, actually, Khartoum was classed as a home station. And they decided that the 2nd Battalion had its tour of duty, which was all finished. So they gave all notice out that a list was going up of who would be transferred to the first, because the 1st Battalion was coming from England to go to China. And the list up was that everybody that had joined up after November the 1st, 1932, would be going to join the 2nd Battalion, and I was one of them. And there was quite a few of us, I think there's somewhere in the region of about nearly 300 that joined the 2nd Battalion, they joined the 1st Battalion. And then we were left behind, when the battalion moved, they went out first, and we left about 3 days later to join the 1st Battalion at Port Sudan. And there was great fun there, because the 1st Battalion, with coming from England, they only had kit bags, and that we had special boxes to go as we brought from India. We took them, and the transport, the man in charge of the transport was Paddy Muir, and when they unloaded them from the train, they said, "What's all this?" And we said, "Well, that was part of our kit." And there was a bit controversy on whether they would allow them on, but we had no kid bags to put. We only had a small sea kid bag, but we had the big kid bag to put there like they had, so they allowed us to put them on board. But there were a square box, not a square box, but there were, if they were packed right, they took no room up. There was no space between them. Now, let me think, they were roughly about 3 foot long, about two foot wide, and a foot deep, and they had a lock on, an enclosed lock. We couldn't smash a lock off, but if you did, you could still prise it open with a crowbar and anything like.
You mentioned the date September 1939. Was that the right date? Is that the right year?
Roughly, yes, 37. I keep getting mixed up with the years now. September 1937, roughly, I think it was about September, and we joined the 1st Battalion, and I think it was the Dilwara. The Dilwara, I think the troop ship was. And as luck happened, when we got on board, we joined the 2nd Platoon. We didn't know them anyhow, like, but we managed to get round. But they couldn't understand the different KD we were wearing. The trousers, see, on the 1st Battalion, when we showed in, they had the two buckles at the front. Well, we had no buckle at the front. We used the button straight up, and we had what they call a putty belt, a belt that went round, and it was always fastened at the side. And 9 times out of 10, the lads, our lads from the 2nd Battalion, kept losing these putty belts, and they find the 1st Battalion, there was where the 1st lads were wearing them. So when we got to, I'll tell you this later on, like, but we settled down into the routine and got to know around, and we called it, we called it Aden, going back out. And then we did get ashore, and we called it Bombay, and I think we were just allowed ashore to just to stretch our legs, but we were allowed off the deck side. And I think we stopped about a day there, and then we went on to Colombo. And I think we were allowed, we got on off to stretch our legs for a march. We went for about, I think, a mile and a half march to stretch our legs. And then came back on board again, and then we called it Singapore, but weren't allowed off. We then set sail for Hong Kong. And we just caught the edge of a typhoon. And just as we got into Hong Kong, everything is settled, but all the wrecks and that was there. But we weren't allowed off Hong Kong. And I think we just got some water and everything on there, and some more foodstuffs for the boat. We set sail for Shanghai.
Was it much the same kind of condition and journey as you'd had with the other boats you'd
been
on?
Yes, just the same thing.
Same routine.
The hammocks, you could either sleep on the floor or could sling them up, or you could go on deck and sling them. And there was also the same boat drill and everything. Like, PT, there was a PT as well. But the best laugh was going from Colombo to Singapore. I was surprised when I saw it. Do you know, it was like a mill pond. There wasn't a ripple on it. And I've heard tales of these sailing boats. They've been marooned, they've been in that place, and there were no wind to sail. And I remember it there. And another thing fascinating was watching the dolphins in front of us. We used to go, some calls them dolphins, we call them porpoises. Mm. And we had them right up here to Hong Kong, but we never saw any more from Hong Kong up to Shanghai. And then we went to, we got off at the Bund, and we marched up the Nanking Road. I always remember that.
Were Chinese civilians there to see you and watch you?
Well, the Japanese was bombing them, you know. So we went up, and we went to a place called the Yuyen Road Schools. That was nearly on the western side of Shanghai.
Had you received any lectures and talks about the Chinese?
No, not at all. No. And we settled ourselves down into this schools. And it was more like routine again. Because we were just settling ourselves down, getting organised. Because I think myself, I don't know whether it was the Loyals or the Lancashires we were leaving. And eventually we moved up into what they call Great Western Road Barracks. And then we started distribution and went up to the Hong Kong Railway on the outskirts of Shanghai. There was all what they call posts set out. And half the battalion was at Great Western Road Barracks. And two companies were doing what they call Jespiel Park barracks. That was on the Suchow Creek, near the Suchow Creek. And there was, we had to man these posts there was all right from here, and their O post was the central. That's where we had the telephone exchange, and all telephone lines went out to different posts. And there was different countries. There was the French, there was the Italians, and there was the Americans there, and they all joined on this the ring round the international settlement. And we were on the what they call the Hong Kong Railway. It was just like a roadway, and there's a railway line, and there's a railway crossing. The Chinese used to come backwards and forwards, the civilians like, and the Japanese was on the other side, and we were quite friendly. We eventually got quite friendly with the Japanese. But they were a gentleman battalion, if you get what I mean. They weren't, I'll tell you later on about them. And we got quite friendly with them because they were gentlemen and they respected us. And there was one officer there, he was a great fan of Fred Astaire. And he wouldn't perform in front of his own mate. He used to come round, round, and he used to dance and sing like Fred Astaire. We got to know it was called the Businessmen's Battalion of Tokyo. And they'd been conscripted into the Japanese army. And they used to share everything, a lot of things with us. Plenty of beer and everything, and spirits and cigarettes and sweet chocolates and everything like that. They used to share out and everything.
Did you see any evidence of the way they were treating the Chinese?
Well, they treated them well. These what we were just on what they call O-post, and the signals was there. But the other signal, there used to be two signals down at the other different posts. And they were gentlemen. They used to invite us over for a drink or anything like that, and talk. And they used to love to talk about England. And one or two officers had been educated in England. And there was a sergeant there, who was a bearded sergeant. I think there's a photograph of him in there. And we used to call him the Great Okoto. That was his name sounded like that. So we nicknamed the Great Okoto, Sergeant the Great Okoto. Ah. Then, through time, they got seemed to get too familiar because a lot of big generals came up. And eventually they got relieved. I don't know where they went to, like, but we got the rough and ready. And my worthy rough and ready. They were savages. There was nothing on a night time, they would think nothing of just getting and shooting the machine guns off into the air all over. We used to have to dive for it. And they used to torture the poor Chinese. These.
Did you see this happening in front of you?
Yes, we couldn't do a thing about it. No, because the other side of the railway, see.
What kind of things were they doing?
Well, they had one fella there, and it was cold weather. This would be, I think, in January 1938. And they had this China, I don't know whether he was a soldier or what, but they slipped him, and they stood him in front of this fire, and they were dousing him with ice cold water. That went all tied to this post, and they were dousing them, and they had the fire built close to them, and they were torturing them. Eventually, they did kill them.
Mm. How did you feel when you saw this kind of thing
going
on?
We couldn't stand it. Now then, there was an incident there, I can't remember what happened, but on the Soo Chow Creek side, there was something happened. And all of a sudden, they had to get all the generals and even the consuls had to come and, of course, Major Heslop, he put them all the riflemen and the machine gun and the companies on standby. Because something had happened. I think they'd been torturing some of the Chinese. They thought nothing of this Soo Chow Creek, there was a bridge. There were two Japanese with all the Chinamen. Or a Chinese woman, and they just drop her and break her back over the railroads. Ah, they were terrible. And if they shot anybody, they'd think nothing of just shooting a Chinaman or a child, and they would just throw them into the creek. Ah.
Did you have any problems with them? Did they try in any way to come across?
Well, no, they never came across. No, no. But we weren't allowed across there at all. We hadn't to step across the railway where there's last lot. But with the first lot, we were quite friendly with them. They were all right.
Mm. Must have tested your patience to grade you to watch these things going on.
Major Heslop, he got on standby and everything, and he says, "Oh, blow the buggers to bits." Don't stop. There's something happened, and but I know all the generals that came up there, and the CEO, and the councillors, the French councillor came, and the English councillor came up, consulate, and they had a tin wagon and everything, so they used to quieten things down. Mm. And then we were quite happy there, because it was quite a nice place, because we lived like lords there, you know, because the rate of exchange was 7 pence to the Chinese dollar. See, well, and the things were quite cheap there. There's no purchase tax or things on there, because you could go up with 5 Chinese dollars and have a good night. That was only 35 pennies. That's about another three shilling.
Ah. We're still on 3 and 6 minutes a day, I believe.
Something like that. We're still on the, right up to the war. We're on the, most I ever got was 3 and 9 months as a private. Then when you got mainland Scotland, you got another 9 months. And when you got paid.
Were you still a private at this time?
Oh, yes, I was still a private. Now then, routine was not like the same. We used to get relieved. And some signalers stopped down at the Babbies Gate Western Road. And some went on duty. And we were there maybe about a week. And then we would come and get relieved and call back. And we could go back on at weekends to get our washing changed and have baths. Mm. And they were just wooden huts like that in Great Western Road. And then we could go down the town. Mm. And there was a Union Jack Club there, and we often used to. And the cinemas were quite good. There was. There was one there opposite the racecourse. He used to show all the modern films because I used to write home. And the wife said, "Well, we've never seen that one yet." And Robin Hood, Erlen Finn in Robin Hood, we saw that before it was released in England. We saw Robin Hood, the Good Earth, now what was that? There was three girls in it. There was. Three girls named Mary somebody. We saw all that. And the cinemas were all air-conditioned in them days. And there wasn't all the English cinema. You didn't have to, when you anybody come to go in the pasture, you did have to stand up. There was enough room for to walk in between the you could just sit down and they would just walk through. It was quite.
Did you just sit with the civilians?
Aye. Oh, yes, it's civilians, like. And there was Chinese writing on the other side. And I think on one side, it was French as well. And with the English talking. Now, if they put such as a French film on, which they did in the French concession, and they had French cinemas there, they used to put English on the side, the French films.
Could you move between concessions when you
were at leisure? There was a French. Well, the Americans and the English was all one. The American Marines. And there was the. But we never. I think there was no Italians there. Then there was the French. That's all there was. And what made me laugh was Ethiopia at the time. You remember when the Italians. The Italian Grenadiers came with all the Tobies and everything on. And I think they were down at the Italian side, but we never got down to there. But we went down to the French side. And I forget now what to call it.
Have any troubles with the different nationalities?
Not exactly. There was maybe brawls down in the bars, but there was we were not quite used to this. They used to call Shanghai the Paris of the East, you know. But we couldn't get away with it. Like, we went down, and when we first went, they said the Union Jack Club. So it was quite good there. You could go and play bingo, you could play billiards, and that's, you could get a haircut, you get shaves, and get a drink if you want. You could get a meal there. And then decided to explore the town, see? And my, what a town it was, we found out. And we couldn't get to understand these, see, we'd never been used to going to these bars, and then these girls used to come and sit with you, you know. And then you went to these cabarets, and there's these dance hostesses, you know, used to get tickets and get them for a dance. We couldn't get used to it, but eventually did get used to it. It was quite good, like. And but the timing, see, we had to be back in barracks by 12 o'clock, midnight. There was no such a thing as stopping out to Rivali or anything like that. And but we enjoyed ourselves, and now there's quite a few things we did, but I can't remember them now. We used to set a signal, we used to generally have a signal scheme. Set up the signal officer, Paddy Mayer, would set up a signal scheme. And we used to generally get in some of these high-rise flats on right on top of the buildings. And we could set on a night time, we could set a lamp up, and we could signal round, such as up to Jessfield Park or to O-Post on there. And also during the day, we could practice with our heliographs. Because if the sun was out, like, and we could practice the heliographs. But it couldn't have any visual such as semaphore, and with the flags, it was too far away.
What kind of signals were passing between yourselves and the posts?
Just verbal messages, like, just for practicing, like. Because they had a direct line to the battalion HQ down from O-Post down into, actually they had two lines. We'd make two lines, and we also in Jessfield there was a post at Jessfield where the barracks were, and there was an outside line there. And also, see, when we got used to that, we used to go on man. It was a small exchange there, and the company commander, he was A Company. He had a line to his office, and then there was a colour sergeant. He had to have a line. You have to come from O-Post down. There's two lines from O-Post down to here. We had one there, flapper next year, one of these funny 110 telephone exchanges. See, them days you used to have one with a generator, and you used to ring a bell. Well, with that, to call the exchange, it rung it had a flap on. You used to knock the flap down. So when we got, some of the lads got to know girls and that down there, and they used to say, well, the lasses used to ring up, such as A Company, and we used to answer the phone, can I speak to so-and-so? We said, well, no. He says, he's on duty. So we'd say, what do you, maybe say, he's at O-Post. So we'd get two safety pins and say, right, if you go and speak for O-Post, get them on the line, put two safety pins and connect them through our there. Because it wasn't automatic exchange, it was a manual exchange in Shanghai. By the phone that where we were, it was a manual. It was just the receiver and operator used to answer.
As young men, obviously, in an all-male world, women, how did you manage that?
Oh, they used to shack up with the girls, the Chinese. Oh, yes. Alec Livingstone, he got well on with her one, and she was a nice lass now. They used to be in these bar girls, you could go to bed with them. Oh, yes. Just, if you wanted to take one out, you used to have to pay $3. That was a commission that he would get on his drinks, because he used to, they weren't real drinks, they were just like coloured water. And he said that the barman used to say, well, that was the vacation I would get if she stopped in the bar. And she used to take it to the flat. He used to spend up to till about time to go home. And if you get a rickshaw there.
Was VD a problem in the unit?
Yes, it was.
Battalion?
Mm. There was the syphilis and the gonorrhea, like. Mm.
What was the treatment in China for that?
Well, the team used to go down, they used to call it, the lads used to say, go to college. They were going to college. There was a hospital in down in Shanghai itself, but whereabouts, I can't remember where it was now. But there was a boy, he used to be in charge. Obviously, a lot of lads talk about him, this Captain George. He says he's a good dart player. Because I said, well, how come we've got a good dart player? Well, he says, stick your needle in your ass.
Was there any protective situation that the men were supposed to go through if they were going out on an evening with the intention of taking a young woman out somewhere?
No.
To combat VD?
Well, they're mainly the ones that got it, used to go, what they used to go out of bounds, you know. They used to be the organised brothels that you went to, and they were quite clean. Yes, they were good clean. But it was some of the lads would already get drunk, and they would get taken, these rickshaw fellas would take them out of what they call the U-tongs, into the down-out places. Mm.
Was it still an offence to get VD?
Well, you did, what you did, the lads who used to, when they went into hospital, like they used to lose the fistacy pair. And then when they came out, they got so many markmen's parades, you had to do extra parades to get your proficiency back. And you used to lose it for a year. You lost your proficiency pair for a year, unless you proved that you could do these things after your markman's parade. But mainly it was nearly at least 3 months. You lost pay for 3 months.
This was as it had been in India.
Yes, it was the same in India. But you never heard much of it in India. Can't remember any of the lads going down in India, and not in the Signal Platoon anyhow, can't remember.
Did you see much of the actual warfare situation between the Chinese and Japanese?
No, we didn't. We just got there just after they bombed China, because I think there's some photographs where the All Nankin Road, well, actually the Japanese hadn't bombed it. It was we thought it was the Japanese that had bombed Shanghai, but it wasn't on this Nankin Road, the international settlement. He said it was a Chinese pilot given a victory roll, and he's lost his bombs off. That's as far as we can concern, like.
How did you find the Chinese people?
Very good. And you know what? They used to call us Johnny. And we could get anything off them. Also, they thought more of us than any other, such as the Americans. They didn't like the Americans. And the French, they weren't so bad, but they hadn't a good word to say for the Italians. The Italians didn't say much of the Italians. The soldiers, like. But the Chinese, they would do anything for us. Anything, ask them to do something. Oh, yes. Mm. And the rickshaws, that was a way of travel. You used to travel around, like. And they used to always say that the English were quite generous. Well, we were quite generous. But the Americans, they used to actually, you're supposed to bargain with them for the price and everything, like. But we never bothered. We just coming out, never been out before, like. But when we got later on, we used to bargain. But it was quite cheap. See, we're nothing out of pocket. I think it was from the barracks. I think it was about nearly 2 miles from the centre of the town. It was about twopence, and they were well paid. They thought themselves well paid, the Chinese. Mm. Then they opened up a brothel near the barracks. Mm. But things were more like routine. It was more like up on our post and then come back for a rest, do some parades in the And then when we did a test, a signal test there, we had to do it, and we did it on the race course. Mm. But we never saw much, there was much racing going on then.
Was there still a great emphasis on your dress and how you behaved?
Well, that's where we started, see, we could go out in KD, we'd go out in khaki. We had khaki, the bright buttons and the normal. And but they hadn't the long putties then. We had long trousers. We hadn't any breeches trousers then. Then we were done away with when we left India. And the trousers. And went out in there. And also, we were allowed to buy a blue suit. That blue suit there. And so we got that made in China. And we were allowed to go out in blues. Mm. Because the buttons, we had the regimental tailor, he made them there, and you had to buy the buttons from the QM for the tailor to put on the... And you also, you could either wear a stiff blue cap, or you could wear a Glengarry, the green Glengarry. Mm.